Researchers at the Domino's Pizza Institute announced yesterday that they are nearing completion of their 30-year study testing the limits of what human beings will eat.
People willingly ate everything our lab created. In fact, they pay money for it. The results continue to surprise me.
Over the course of the study, Domino's scientists have found that decreasing the nutritional value and increasing the visual repulsiveness of their pizzas only makes them more popular.
This applies to the crispy melt pizza. It's basically one pizza inverted on top of another pizza. It looks like something no animal should consume, much less a human.
One recent creation is constructed out of a cardboard-based crust layered in Oreo cookie crumbs and drizzled with a wax-like substance.
We hypothesized that the sight of it alone would repulse customers, but it became one of the most popular items on the menu.
The Domino's scientists now believe that a certain percentage of human beings may have a genetic predisposition to eat unhealthy foods made from other, even unhealthier foods. The Institute will next test human tolerance of the crispy nacho platter pizza, the big New York hot dog pizza, and the strawberries and cream milkshake dessert pizza.
In the final stages of the study, we plan to just top the pizzas with actual garbage, but judging from our findings, people will probably eat those too.
Dr. Moore said he initially had moral issues with conducting the tests on humans, but has since come to see the subjects as, quote, cheese and sauce consuming beasts.
Hey, everybody. What's happening? Damn. Intro, man. The onion. This is funny stuff. I know you guys loved the last onion intro that I used, so that one kind of fell on my lap. I just couldn't help myself. Anyway, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil. I'm the host of this fine podcast. And today we're going to be drinking Scotch Ale and eating some Philly cheesesteak sandwiches. My Dodgers are currently playing the Philadelphia Phillies in the playoffs right now. So it only seemed appropriate to feature Philly cheesesteaks. That, and you know, it's just one of my favorite sandwiches in the entire world. So I was going to do it anyway, but this is a really good excuse. The Great American Beer Festival happened last week, and I didn't make it, but everyone who went had a blast. Of course, you know, how can you go there and not have fun? But the brewery did not meddle. And neither did Stone Brewing for the first time that I can remember. So I don't know what the hell's going on over there. The judges are all wacky. But something's amiss anyway. So I hope I can make it next year. But if I don't, I told myself I was going to buy a shitload of really good beer and just spend all weekend drinking them. You know, just like if I was there. Because I felt really left out. I don't know why. It only gone once. But I felt left out. So that was a good time. Also, I'm not sure if you saw this on the news, man, but here in Southern California, we're on fire. I mean, there's some really hardcore winds going on here because it's Santa Ana wind season. And of course, you know, with Santa Ana winds come these fires because people start fires and everything's dry. So we've got wildfires again. They're all back. But they're rough. I mean, this time, they're really rough. A bunch of homes are being damaged and burned down. We have fatalities. I mean, we escape without a whole lot of property damage. But this thing's nasty this year. And it's not over. I mean, it's still going. And they continue all through October, these things. I mean, we're usually wearing shorts on Halloween. Or kilts. Oh, speaking of kilts, what a segue. A professional segue. Kilt lifter from Moylan's Brewery in Nevada, California. Father Spoon raves about this beer. And I couldn't find it. So finally I found it, and I had a bottle, loved it, said, oh, I'll have it again on the show. So Moylan's is the same brewery that makes Hopsicle. You probably heard of that one, right? Hopsicle, it's a beer that Rick from Pacific Brew News, this guy gets wood over this thing. I mean, you say Hopster, Rick, it's like audio Viagra for that dude. It's like this. Hey, Rick, hops. Kilt Lifter, it's a Scotch Ale. 8% ABV, and we've got it poured here. It's a nice, it's a dark red, little light brown maybe, nice solid fat head, sticks all the way down the glass, smells like it's got a nice caramel aroma, very sweet smell, you know, caramel all the way down this thing, and not a whole lot of hops. That's one thing about Scotch ales, even if it had a lot of hops, I doubt you'd smell it. but they usually are not hopped really heavy. It's a very light aroma. So we'll taste now, like I haven't before. Very sweet, full mouthfeel, a lot of caramel. The finish is kind of warm because of the alcohol, 8%. I mean, that's not heavy, but it's pretty good. The thing is, it's really heavy. This mouthfeel is really heavy. It's like syrup. It just covers your mouth. But a great, great beer. So, Kilt Lifter from Moylan's Brewery. I mean, they make a lot of beer. I think they've got like 12 or 10 or 12 different beers they make, I think. It's crazy. What a great beer, Kilt Lifter.
This is something that all of us will swallow hard and go forward with.
Everybody does have their favorite sandwich. I mean, you ask anybody what their favorite sandwich is, and you're going to get an answer from them. Yeah, they're going to have an answer because everyone has a sandwich that they like. Some people are simple. Submarine sandwich or a hero. Some people might like a Reuben. Other people might just say, oh, I like hamburgers. You know, because a hamburger is a sandwich. But for me, next to a sandwich of, say, sausage and peppers or meatballs, Philly cheesesteak, wit, of course. Now, I've not been to Philly. I've been incredibly close to the actual town. I've been close enough to smell it, but I've never been in the actual town itself. But I have had authentic Philly cheesesteak sandwiches because it's on many occasions. There's this place here in California. It's the greatest restaurant gift of all time. It's a place called Philly's Best, and it's owned by Bob Levy, who happens to coach my friend's daughter's soccer team. Now, I've been eating Philly's Best for about 14 years. Never gets old because it's such a great sandwich. And I went there recently, and I took pictures of my food, of course. So check the website, zeroface.wordpress.com. I started a regular photo site that is a blog just to carry pictures and media from the podcast. So that's zeroface project.blogspot.com. But there's a link on our podcast site, so you can just click that. But the sandwich is very simple. Just like all good things, it's simple. And it relies on really good ingredients, fresh ingredients. Thinly sliced ribeye steak, seasoned, cooked on a flat iron grill with provolone or cheese whiz melted over the top, fried onions, an ungodly fresh deli roll, and if you're like me, little grilled green and red bell peppers, mushrooms. I like that. But unlike Philly's Best out here, or any other Philly cheesesteak type place that's outside of Philadelphia, if you go to Philly, you can expect to get your balls busted in half if you're not prepared to place your order when it's time to place your order. Cheesesteak shops in Philadelphia are not known for their patience and customer service. I mean, it's in Philly, for God's sake. And I don't get this either. Philly, they call that place the city of brotherly love. I'm not sure where the hell that came from, because every person I've ever met from Philly was a giant pain in the ass. I mean, didn't their fans cheer when, who was Michael Irvin, the Dallas Cowboy? He broke his leg and they were cheering as they're carrying him off the field. Cheering because he broke his leg, not cheering for him. They booed Santa Claus. Ugh, that town, man, they got problems. But here are the rules. If you're going to order a cheesesteak from a shop in downtown Philly, you have to act like you know what you're ordering. Don't hesitate when you make your choices. You should know your order before you approach the counter. Practice. And keep special requests to an absolute minimum. I mean, in some shops, it'll ruin your day if you don't order your sandwich right. You should be assertive. And these guys are going to smell. If you're an out-of-towner and you're like, you know, you're traveling out of town, they're just prepared to bust your nuts. You get this wrong, you're screwed. Try to act like you've been there 1,000 times. And in some cases, the menus are numbered. All right, so it's even easier. So you can say, yo, number 4, side of fries. Or, yo, number 3, wit. Wit is with onions. So wit indicates whether or not you want onions, fried onions on the sandwich. There's wit or wit out. That's how they do it in Philly. And if you want your steak with cheese whiz and onions, it would be like whiz wit. You know, one steak whiz wit. And if you want to make them at home, it's really not that tough. You just need to get the right ingredients. And I know it sounds simple, but I mean, that's the problem with simple food. It sounds simple, but, you know, you can get the wrong ingredients. I mean, order a Philly cheesesteak sandwich from a, like, Subway or Togo's or some chain, some sandwich chain. Order Philly cheesesteak there. What you're going to get is a crap ripoff of a real Philly cheesesteak because it's really all in the ingredients. And usually it's the roll that kills it for these places. When we were at the GABF last year, we went to that, I can't remember the name of the place. It was that brewery. I ordered the place we went on the video. We went for breakfast or for lunch. Ended up drinking like 37 beers. I ordered a Philly's cheesesteak sandwich from that place. It came on ciabatta bread. I was like, oh, can't eat that. It was just so thick. It was really bad. It was horrible. But the soup was good. So let's talk about the meat first. You either make friends with your butcher or hit an Asian market like me. Is what they need to do here is they take a big hunk of ribeye and they freeze it. Then they put it on a belt saw with a really fine blade and they cut the meat so thin you can almost see through it. And that's what you want. You want marbled ribeye sliced really thin. At the Asian market, they do this because they have this thing called shabu shabu. And what that is they take really thinly sliced meat and they put it on a platter. And then in the middle of the table will be a big bowl, a pot of boiling stock that has, you know, seasonings and stuff in it. And then they'll throw this thinly sliced meat into the pot, cook it for about, you know, a few seconds, and then pull it out and it cooks really fast. So they sell ribeye thinly sliced and it's perfect for these sandwiches. Now, here's where, you know, the hard part is bread. If you don't live in Philadelphia, you can't get Amoroso's rolls, then you can have to find a substitute. And the real only substitute is a French roll that's baked fresh at a deli. Not Sara Lee or Vandy Camp's rolls that you get from the bread aisle. Deli, right out of the oven. Crunchy on the outside, really light, soft on the inside. It's the only thing that's going to work for this sandwich. If you can't get a fresh deli roll, skip it. And toppings is the other thing. It's totally up to you. It's your sandwich. Have it like you like it. I like fried onions, mushrooms, peppers, like I said. As far as cheese, to me, nothing beats provolone. But Cheese Whiz, if you like it, some people actually think Cheese Whiz is the best on these sandwiches. Everyone's got their preference. But to make it, heat a little bit of oil in a small pan. Saute your toppings until they're pliable. Make them however you like them. It's your sandwich, you know. I like everything super soft. I render the hell out of the onions, cook everything down to they're super soft. You set them aside. And then place a third of a pound of meat in the pan, lay them flat, overlap them so they look like they're going to fit in the bun. And then as soon as the meat starts to turn gray, flip it over and start shredding it with the spatula. Little bite-sized pieces is what you're after. Look at the photo on the site. I know it might look unappetizing, but trust me, it's delicious. If you want a little cheese, lay it over the meat right in the pan, let it melt, and put your toppings right in the pan, right next to the meat. Allow them to reheat a little bit. Cover the pan, let it cheese melt over the meat, about a minute, and you're looking for about gray meat. You don't want it charred. You want any real color on it. You want it gray. I don't like my rolls warmed, but if you do, you can warm it in the oven. Don't use the microwave, you nut. Put a roll in the microwave, it turns to rubber. Put it in the oven, about a minute, just get it warm. Put the meat and cheese, lay it inside the bun, put the toppings along the side of the meat. The idea is that you, when you eat the sandwich, you just have meat and cheese and toppings in every bite, so if you put them on the top, they're going to fall off. So you put them on the side, and you're going to get meat, cheese, and toppings, and bread. Ugh, God, it's so good. But that's it. Enjoy Philly cheesesteak. And if you're in California, check out Philly's Best. I think it's phillysbest.com. Anyway, love that.
Well, you took a picture with your offensive lineman, a lot of hugs, Donald Driver's picking you up. What's the significance of all this?
Well, if it is my last game, I want to remember it. It's tough. Miss these guys and miss the game, but just want to let them know that. I wasn't planning on doing this either. Way to put me on the spot.
Well, we appreciate it. What are the emotions that are going through your mind right now?
I think you can see.
Well, I wanted to give you a heads up on what's next. In 2 weeks, Thursday, October 30th, we're going to release show 27. It's going to be our first official Halloween show. And it's going to be a different kind of show. So don't expect the usual stuff that you normally would hear on the show. I'm going to play more music than I normally would. And not the kind of Halloween music you might be used to for a Halloween show. No Monster Mash. None of that, you know. Spooky, evil, dark soundtracky stuff. Skinny Puppy, Doubting Thomas, Rob Zombie. You know, some fun music. But real Halloween music. Anyway, you can fast forward through that crap. Because the main event, and the reason I'm giving you a heads up, is right here. We're going to play a game right here on the show, and you're all going to participate. About 2 years ago, I prepared a horror movie quote game for Dude Night, and Gonzo didn't show up that night. He was sick. So Hog Dog and I did the show by ourselves, and it was fun, but the game sat there, and we never got to it. And it's one of the many games we never really finished, but I kept this one because I knew I could use it sometime, and I put a lot of work into it. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to release the show on Thursday, October 30th, the day before Halloween, and somewhere in that show, I'm going to start this game. And I think there's 21 separate movie quotes from multiple movies. And there's more than one or two quotes from some movies. So if you think one might be obscure, if you don't get it, you might hear another one from that movie later that you're definitely going to get. Then you can go back and fill that other one in that you may not have gotten and make the connection. But they're all from famous horror movies. So you must get the exact name of the movie correct. No vague answers. No incorrect movie names. All right, if in doubt, check imdb.com. But listen to the game. Write down your answers. When it's finished, I'm going to play a 3 or 4 minute song. Put your answers in the comments section. You can listen to the rest of the show afterward. The first person to get all 21 movie quotes correct is going to be declared the winner. I mean, the minute there's an absolute winner, contest is over. I'm going to name the person on the comments section, and then the game will officially be over. The contest will stay open for 1 week after the show has been released. So up until the point, if no one gets all of them right, after a week, whoever gets them all right, or whoever gets the most right, is going to be declared the winner. Now, in the event of a tie, I don't know what I'm going to do. What if a tie? We'll wing it. Hopefully there won't be a tie. Anyway, here's the prize. The winner is going to receive one bottle of Autumn Maple from the brewery, shipped to wherever you want it delivered from right here at My Life as a Foodie. It's the perfect fall beer. It's going to be a great compliment to your Thanksgiving, since Halloween basically going to be done deal by the time the contest is over. And hopefully the beer will be released, because at this point, I don't think it's been released yet. So it'll be released, and you know, we'll be able to give it away. So this is an official heads up. Sometime on Thursday, October 30th, watch the feed to the show. If you subscribe to iTunes or the RSS feed from the blog or beersafari.com, keep it on wherever you're at. When the show's released, listen when you can. Put your answers in the comments section for that episode, not anywhere in it, but for that episode. And the first one to appear that's named all of them correct, in the correct order, will be declared our winner. So there you have it. And don't say I didn't warn you. And don't expect a regular My Life as a Foodie either, like I said. I mean, kind of weird around Halloween. You know, I do a lot of strange shit at Halloween, so. I think I'll do one recipe, and then the rest will be Halloween. Food, we'll take a back seat, all right? And we'll drink some evil beer, some spooky beers. Like this Kilt Lifter. It's evil. It's good.
It's got to be all about job creation, too. Also, too, shoring up our economy and putting Fannie and Freddie back on the right track. And so healthcare reform and...
Hey, so CNN ran a report recently on the food shortage situation that's going on in Cuba. I'm not sure if you guys saw this or not. Oh my God, it's horrible. Hurricanes Gustav and Ike ripped through the country, right? I mean, every time there's a hurricane that comes off the East Coast, it comes up through the Caribbean. And it usually nails either Haiti or Cuba or both, but they get it first. I mean, it comes, it's nasty. But it ripped right through the country, and now the Cubans are faced with a food shortage that is getting worse all the time. But the real problem that I find with this report is that the Cuban government is making the farmers look like the bad guys, like they're price gouging. Totally unfair. The Cuban government heavily regulates how much they can charge for the produce that they're selling. But the price of gas is going up and up, and the farmers have to pay more for gas, but can't charge more for the produce. The gas goes up, that they don't control. But the farmers, they pay more for fuel, and they're not allowed to recoup the losses by charging more for their food. Because that happens everywhere. CNN's Morgan Neal reports.
It was a sight Cubans thought they'd left behind, empty shelves. Little more than a month ago, these markets were filled with fruit and vegetables. But Hurricanes Gustav and Ike devastated farm production, And so, years after the economic crisis of the 1990s, Cubans are again facing the specter of hunger.
No ha quedado ninguna provincia.
There isn't a single province or municipality in Cuba that wasn't affected, says the country's vice minister of agriculture. Cubans still receive a monthly food ration, but there's now less to go around. Authorities warn the crisis could last 6 months. In response, the government has set price limits and harsh penalties for those who break them. This just weeks after it raised the price of gasoline by 70% to $5.50 a gallon, making it more expensive for farmers to get crops to market. In this cartoon in the state newspaper, vendors are painted as the people's enemy, profiting from the food shortage. But as economist and government critic Oscar Espinosa Chepe takes us through a market, he says the government shares some of the blame.
Desierta, no hay producto, no hay oferta.
It's deserted, he says. There's nothing for sale. The government has adopted fixed prices for farmers at a time when the price of gasoline has gone up. What that means, he says, is that many of Cuba's most productive farmers, those who work in part for profit, can no longer afford to sell their goods. Just look at how things are after the hurricane, says this woman, who said she'd already been to three other markets looking for food. With the hurricanes, says this would-be shopper, there's nothing. Almost everything's disappeared.
And that's one of the biggest markets in Havana. Much more common are neighborhood markets like this one, where people can fulfill their day-to-day needs. But many, just like this one, are now empty.
And that has many here thinking of the belt-tightening crisis of the 90s, a time most Cubans hoped they'd left behind.
I mean, I'm sorry, man. I just think that sucks. I mean, it sucks for everybody, but it really sucks for the farmers. I mean, on one hand, you feel sorry for the people there. You know, they can't afford to really pay more for groceries. But what about the farmers? I mean, what is this, charity? I mean, they're doing all the work. They're paying double for gas. The government regulates what they can charge for their product. And on top of that, they don't squelch the public humiliation that they're faced with by looking like the bad guy. The bad guy is Fidel Castro and his asshole brother running the place. I mean, honestly, I think they could be doing more for their people. They deserve better, and they're not. I really think that the people of Cuba deserve a little bit better than that. I mean, they're our neighbors, and it's a shame we can't help them. And I don't want to get political. I think it's a shame. Let me just say that. I'll tell you what else is a shame. It's going to be a shame when I'm out of this beer. Kirt Lifta. I knew there was a Scottish joke in there somewhere, but I'm not going to make it. This was interesting. My wife told me about this. Beachgreens.com. It's available only in Long Beach, California right now. But it's a mission-driven company, and they deliver organic and sustainably grown produce direct from local Southern California farmers to your house, apartment, or work. And right now, only in the greater Long Beach area. But I could see this catching on. The mission statement says, we strive to make organic and sustainably grown produce more readily and easily available in our busy lives through education of ourselves and our community and through relationships conducted with honesty, integrity, respect, and with a commitment to sustainability. We envision Beach Greens to be a small part of a larger picture of just and sustainable food system where farming is a viable occupation and all have access to clean and healthy food. I mean, that's pretty cool, right? So her friend ordered, and I haven't heard back on her on that. I asked her last week. But the minute she gets her produce, maybe I'll do a conference call, and we'll get her opinion on it. I don't see how it could suck. Like this kilt lifter, it doesn't suck. Oh, this story came across CNN last week, too. And this was a bit of a heartstring tugger. Ooh, ma. Tony Madone is this 53-year-old farmer in Colorado. Except he's a different kind of farmer. Last summer, about 40 volunteers helped him. This Colorado farm-to-table project. And they supply families in need with more than 108,000 pounds of produce. Free. He gives away everything he grows. The problem is that this year, this past spring, he found out he had prostate cancer and he had to have surgery. And what this meant was that he couldn't, you know, plant his seeds. So no food's going to grow. I don't know if you know, but you know, when you're farming, you plant seeds in the spring, and you grow throughout the spring and the summer, and then in fall, you harvest. Usually, that's how it works. So he couldn't plant seeds. No food was going to grow. These people kind of depended on it. so his neighbor stepped in to help.
Out here,
I just love taking care of the crop.
When you give something a chance,
all you're doing is giving it a chance to grow.
You just never know what you might get. On 15 acres,
go on down there and we'll dump those in.
Tony Madone has been growing vegetables.
This is the 13th season. My wife and I started this 12 years ago.
And in that time, everything he's grown on this land, he's given away.
Every harvest has its own satisfaction.
Given to food banks and the changing faces they serve.
We're being told that those people are now going to food banks and food pantries, and when they receive the fresh produce, some of them are in tears because they've never done it before in their life.
A chance. You know, through this food, Tony has given countless people across this state a chance for 13 years. But this spring, Tony got some news, and he realized this time around he was going to need a chance.
And I was diagnosed in early January with prostate cancer.
It meant surgery in spring. It meant there would be no crops.
You only get one chance a year. You get one chance to plant the seed in the spring of the year. You get one chance to harvest the fruit in the fall of the year.
I'm carrying one just in case.
A chance, though, for 250 neighbors to help.
They just show up.
A chance to grow crops and so much more.
All of our volunteers answered the call. They all knew, and they all wanted to see the success this year as well.
They've harvested enough corn, cabbage, broccoli, and squash to supply more than 35 food banks.
14!
And a chance for Tony to see something more than crops come out of these fields.
Watch what happened with the community. I mean, the farm to table is stronger now than it was a year ago simply because of the hardship of the cancer.
He's learned that out here, life is measured in the chances you give.
Oh, thank you for all your help.
And in the chances you get.
To me, the harvest that we received this year is special.
I mean, man, if that doesn't get you where it counts, you don't have a pulse. 15 acres, and he uses all of it to grow food for people who can't afford to buy it. Doesn't sell a thing. That's just fantastic. If they're giving out angel awards, man, give that guy one. If something else, this is from Jeffrey T. at the Good Beer Show. He's a major supporter of My Life as a Foodie. And he said we could share this in our shows if we wanted. And there's no way I was going to pass it up. Because it's pretty freaking cool. And it shows how stupid Anheuser-Busch really is. I haven't declared my hatred for Budweiser in a long time. So, I jump at the excuse, right? Well, this is a letter written by the lead singer of a band called the Cocaine Wolves. I didn't get his name. But the band's called the Cocaine Wolves. They're from Muncie, Indiana, where the Good Beer Show lives and breathes. And he writes, the hard rock band I'm in, the Cocaine Wolves, submitted to play an event called the Muncie Music Fest. The well-intentioned progressive folks in Muncie, and believe me, folks of that ilk are few and far between in Muncie, started it up last year. They block off a few blocks of downtown, set up some stages, put music in the bars and shops along the strip, try to create a festive atmosphere for the night. It's a good thing for the city in need of good things. So this year we submitted, and we were invited. We were booked on the stage with a pretty sweet time slot. And as a main stage band, we were asked to submit a track for a sampler CD that they were handing out to paying customers. $10 got folks a night of music and a CD with about 15 bands on it. Pretty good deal. So we sent them our song, Ball City, our ode to Muncie, noting how it takes a certain testicular fortitude to be from their fair town. The festival organizers loved it. Not only were we a band with deep Muncie roots, but we're also a band that basically and openly declares Muncie as our home. The song name drops the town, so they picked it as the opening track. The words I heard were, well produced, sets the tone for the CD. Here's where it gets weird. They arrive at the fest, right? They set up their shop in the merchandising area. They're hawking their discs and their shirts before the show starts. One of the organizers comes up and says, hey, there's a problem with the disc. I just found out about a couple hours ago. And he says the short version of the story was that the main sponsor of the event was Budweiser. And the fest was covered with Budweiser signs. Their beer was everywhere. It was being sold everywhere. And apparently, the Budweiser rep got a copy of the CD. Maybe he just got a copy of the track listing. But either way, he contacted the festival organizers, issues an ultimatum. Either don't distribute the disc, or we're pulling all of our sponsorship money. The reason was their track, the first track, Balls City. Bud would not have their, quote, good name associated with it. He says, I have to admit I was laughing at the sheer absurdity of it all. The first pass of the story didn't have any details as to why they chose to issue their ruling. I was racking my brain as to what they found so offensive. There's profanity in the song. There's F-bombs all over the place. But the guy from the fest said that wasn't an issue. They used drug references. They talked about getting laid. Maybe it was the band name, Cocaine Wolves. He says, I can understand how a company with a long-lasting reputation of brewing up intoxicants wouldn't want to be associated with a group of guys with the word wolves in their band name. So he says when it's time to get on the stage, the band manager, the stage manager tells him the problem was the word balls. He felt balls crossed the line. It crossed the line on a sampler associated with a city that's home to Ball State University, Ball Memorial Hospital, and former home to the Ball Corporation, makers of the famous ball jars. So he goes on. He says, we played the show. Stage manager fired up the crowd, telling them the story. We played Ball City. Encouraged people to lap sewer water off the street before drinking Bud. Stage manager had the crowd scream Ball City on everybody's behalf after they were done. There was pride again. So I guess they played it, and they didn't pass out the CD. This is the part that I thought sucked the most. As I walked around the fest before and after our set, I saw and heard a lot of very talented young musicians who are poised to make musical waves in Muncie in the near future. I've been on too many of these comps to care much anymore, but I remember when I was starting out how excited I was the first time one of my bands made a comp that got heard by a lot of people. I feel shitty that we're somehow denying a band a chance to get heard. So all I can say is that if you're one of those bands that got shafted, drop me a line. I'll do what I can to hook you up with some of my contacts in Indy so you can play a show here sometime. So he says, I hope the Muncie Music Fest can somehow make the tracks downloadable for people who didn't get the disc. If you want your own copy of Ball City, drop me a line. I'll get one to you. And check out our theme song, myspace.com, The Cocaine Wolves. So in honor of The Cocaine Wolves and The Good Beer Show and Jeffrey T and the gang, and to further show how incredibly lame and bullish Bud can be, I'm going to play Ball City for you right now on My Life as a Foodie. And if you're thinking of drinking that lame excuse for a beer, that Budweiser American Ale that just came out, because you want to see what it's like, that's the excuse everyone would give you. I just wanted to know what it was like. You know, don't waste your money. You've tasted those beers before. Give your money to a craft brewer. They never pull crap like this. And it affects indie bands are trying to make a go of it. Here's the song.
Ball City! Ball City! Get on the
mean, so what's wrong with that? I mean, they totally take that out of context, Budweiser did. And who are they to take moral high ground after all the bullshit bullying tactics they're responsible for? I mean, for years, look at the power they have. They lean on their enemies till they break. And the clientele of the product, I mean, come on. I mean, I don't want to point fingers, but look at the kind of people that drink Budweiser. And then look at the clientele of, say, like Chimay or Duvel or American and Canadian breweries like Dogfish Head, Allagash, Unibrew. And this got me thinking. You know, last week, GABF was going on. Last year when we attended, there was this huge-ass sign on the wall for Anheuser-Busch. They were a major sponsor of the event. And if you saw the three-part video series I did called Hopped Up, you might remember on the first one, Greg was flipping off the sign in the video. I wanted to make sure I got the picture of him flipping off the sign. It was irritating to us that Anheuser-Busch was a sponsor. But then I reminded myself, and Greg too, they're an American brewery, and this is the Great American Beer Festival. And I noticed that Bud, Miller, Coors were all there, but their booths were always empty, except for the Miller Chill Grills, who were always busy anyway, quite naturally. What I started to realize was that Anheuser-Busch is like the really super ugly girl at school who's mean to everybody. No one wanted to date her. No one wanted to be seen with her. No one wanted to talk to her. And never did. But her dad was filthy, stupid rich. She always had money. So she'd get invited to the parties because she'd buy all the beer, she'd buy all the food, she'd pay for everything. So you treated her nice to get what you wanted from her. But then once the party started, she sat alone in the corner and no one talked to her. I mean, no, I'm not dancing with your ugly ass, especially off the mean shit you said. And what are my friends going to think? So that's how I thought about it. That's how I equated it. It made me feel a lot better about it. Budweiser is the ugly rich chick in class, and she's going to die alone. And it's unfair to ugly girls because they can't help that they're ugly. But Budweiser can help that they're ugly and mean. And they're going to have to pay for a lot of after-school parties and get a nice big makeover, spend some serious time at Lancome counter at Macy's before we're going to think about dating her. And even then, I don't think there's a chance in that. So there's just way too much damage been done. Anyway, check this band out, myspace.com/thecocainewolves. And check out the Good Beer Show, goodbeershow.com. Part of the Beer Safari. It's a jungle of beer. Beersafari.com.
Hey, this is Jeffrey T. for Beersafari.com. If you want to listen to all the notable beer casts all in one feed, go to Beersafari.com. You can hear Big Foamy Head, Craft Beer Radio, Davis on Draft, The Beer Report, ShouldIDrinkThat.com, Life as a Foodie, and check it out, Beersafari.com. Good Beer Show is a member. Proud fucking member.
Last episode, I mentioned this new documentary. It's coming out called Food Inc. And there wasn't a trailer for it, so I couldn't play you anything, but I, you know, at least told you about it. But another one sprung up this week, and it's about new up-and-comer farmers in America who are trying to make a difference by farming. And it's called Greenhorns. And this one has a trailer, so I'm going to share that with you. TheGreenhorns.net is the website for the documentary. They say it's a documentary film, explores the lives of America's young farming community, its spirit, its practices, and needs, as the nation experiences a groundswell of interest in sustainable lifestyles. We're starting to see the promising beginnings of an agricultural revival. Young farmers' efforts feed us safe food, conserve valuable land, and reconstitute communities split apart by strip malls. So here's some of the audio from the trailer. You can check it out. Check out the whole trailer yourself on the film's website, thegreenhorns.net.
I'm doing the best that I can to live honestly. I'm not relying on some strange economic structures that have been set up that benefit some and hurt others to make my livelihood. I think that makes me feel just a little bit safer in a world gone mad.
That's sort of what gave me the balls to do it, is I started doing it and it started rolling and I was like, wow, I could actually do something that I'm morally down with and still pay their mortgage, you know? That hadn't happened to me in that sort of obvious way in the past, where it was so clear that there was absolutely nothing wrong with it and everything was right.
When we first showed up in Cumberland, we had absolutely no idea what we were doing, and we took every book out of the public library that we could find on growing plants and vegetables and farming. Neither of us had really set foot on a working farm, maybe once before that. So we weren't pretty green.
Well, my dad was raised in the Central Valley, and when they were young, they worked a lot in the grape fields. So for dad to kind of hear that, well, his son wants to go back and be a dirt farmer was, you know, he was totally supportive, but he would have, I think, liked to see me be an insurance salesman.
We're making a film about young farmers, their struggle and their valor, the redemptive force that they have for our society, for our culture, for our agriculture, for our countryside, for our nation.
This land belongs to Peninsula Open Space Trust, which is a nonprofit land trust on the coast side. They lease us 4 acres, which we steward for them and grow excellent produce. Our ability, our knowledge, our understanding of this place is growing every year, every moment, every season is different.
In conventional ag, we have a huge machine that would be doing this for us, which is about $30,000, but this works.
The way this garden got started is I was up on my roof and I could see this beautiful patch of green space. And so for about a month, I stocked this building. Finally, I found someone coming out of the building and got the name of the landlord and the phone number. And I called him and I asked him if I could use the space. And he was like, do you want to use part of it or do you want to use all of it? And I was like, all of it? And so he said, okay. And he gave me the code to the garage before he even met me.
I mean, gosh, what a gorgeous place. 70,000 acres of wilderness. And then, you know, 4 acres of tomatoes. What's not to love?
That's pretty cool. I mean, a lot of the footage is shot by Taylor Gentry and Ian Chaney. They did King Corn last year. Remember that one? So, if you're interested in a movie about farming and the farming lifestyle, thegreenhorns.net. I'm not sure where that's playing. They're taking donations if you want to help them out. I mean, they're kind of a bunch of new age hippies, but they're cool. They do the right thing. And like the guy said early on, you know, he can do this, feel good about himself, sleep at night. And on top of that, pays the mortgage. You know, so what's not to like about that? I just hope that continues. Well, I think I've said enough here. My work here is done. Now, I urge you all to prepare as best you can for our next episode. It's not going to be as much about food as it will be about Halloween. So prepare for a total spook fest and a really good time, some ghost stories, and some really good music, and the game, of course. So I'll bring on some spooky beers. We'll do the scary movie quote game. We'll make a little dish, and I think I know what it's going to be already anyway, but I think I'll take a break from being so serious all the time about food issues and stuff and starvation. Take a break from tradition and have a good time for Halloween. So thanks again for listening. Music in this episode by Pendulum. You like it? Download it from the iTunes store. Go to our website, zeroface.wordpress.com. Click on the link to iTunes, buy the song for 99 cents. Thanks again to The Onion for the intro. And until next time, when we get a little spooky for Halloween, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and I'll see you next time, Halloweenies. Ciao.